My next item is important and has relevance around now for a number of reasons. Yesterday, the 28th of June, was the 100th anniversary of the start of the Civil War in Ireland. That's the first thing to say to you. And we know that there was a lot of damage done during that time, both to property and indeed the cost of lives. I'll talk about property in a second. But cast your minds back to a couple of weeks ago. I was talking to Elaine Wiltshire about her great-great-grandfather, whose name is one of the 10,000 names on the RNLI boat, which recently went to Clifton in County Galway. And we talked about his past and his life, and she said, that's as much as I know, because all of the records were destroyed, as you know, she said yourself, in 1922, when the Four Courts was burnt down. That happened 100 years ago, tomorrow, the 30th of June, when the Records Office of Ireland was destroyed during the Civil War, just 2 days after it had started. A man called Herbert Wood was the deputy keeper of the Public Records Office, and he returned to the Four Court site to survey the damage, and he noted, and I quote, "At one blow, the records of centuries have passed into oblivion." They haven't quite, because a fabulous, fabulous project called Beyond 2022 has managed to gather and regenerate most of those particular records. I'm joined on the line by Zoom right now by Dr. Kieran Wallace from Trinity College in Dublin. Dr. Wallace, it's lovely to talk to you, and thanks for taking time to talk to us today. How are you?
Be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Not at all. This is phenomenal. And there must be such a sense of history and just wowness about this, working on it.
It is. It's like a historian's dream as a job to get. It's just sort of going to swim around in a whole sea of historical records, which is super for us. But the project itself, I mean, it's on the go for about 5 years. So when we had our launch event to actually launch the product that people can go and see online for free, The response has been really encouraging, really exciting, very exciting.
I referenced a chat that I had with a woman whose great-great-grandfather we were talking about on the programme, and she hit a roadblock and said, look, that's as much as we know, because she knew that he was born in Kildare, went to sea and was all over the world, was shipwrecked and all that kind of, but there was no records after that.
Yeah. It's a huge, like we describe it on the project as like a chasm or a big hole in Irish history that happens from the fire in 1922. And what was lost in 1922 in the Public Record Office with the state records. So this was all the operations of the English government in Ireland. So all the court records, police records, state inquiries into things, lots of those day-to-day engagements between ordinary citizens and the state. They would sort of, as in any modern archive today, this was the archive that was destroyed was the beginnings of modern archiving practice in Ireland. So all those kind of departmental records were taken into the Public Record Office when they were 20 years old and carefully stored away and catalogues made for them and all that stuff. And it was operating from the 1860s until it was destroyed in 1922. So it had those 50 years of records, but more importantly, it had gathered in wherever there were more ancient records in repositories all around Ireland. So, for instance, if there were 18th century or medieval records that were state records in a cathedral archive or in a courthouse somewhere, they were all gathered in for safekeeping into this one location, which unfortunately was the contributed to their one location demise, if you like.
All right. Can we start at the start here, if you don't mind? Yep. And let's go back. You said this project is underway for the past 5 years. And that's Beyond 2022. Talk to me about that and about the start of it and what the objectives were.
Cool. So the start, I suppose it began with my colleague, Dr. Peter Crooks, who's a medievalist. And he, like all historians, is working in the knowledge that all these records were destroyed and you just can't find anything and that's that. But he, working on medieval records, had encountered a number of times in British repositories and British archives and libraries, copies of medieval records from the medieval court of Chancery, a particular type of court in medieval times. And so he said, oh, look, this is a record, and this is a copy or a transcript of something that was destroyed in 1922. And they were fragmentary in bits and pieces that he encountered. And then over time, he said, well, actually, there's a lot of these from the Court of Chancery. And he gathered them all together into one website called the Circle website, which was really aimed at scholars, Latin medieval records. But then you thought, well, actually, if I'm finding lots of fragments that can replace chancery, maybe the same is true about the Court of Appeal and the Landed Estates Court and the Famine Relief Commission and the Railway Commissions and all these other operations of state. So over time, it began as a very small experiment where myself and the other main co-founder, Peter, was Dr. Seamus Lawless from the computer science side. And this was a history and a computer science challenge. So the historian and the computer scientist, Shay unfortunately died during the course of the project. Oh. So it was very much in Shay's memory. So the vision that those two guys had, Peter and Shay, of saying, how can you arrange this information so that the public can get at it? And we're pulling copy records that could be stored in the British Library, in the National Archives of Ireland, in the National Library, university libraries around the country, any copies that were made. So imagine you had, I want to invent an example here. Imagine you had some, you know, the court in County Longford, the Petty Sessions Court in County Longford, and every 20 years it sends its records up to Dublin to be stored. But in some local Longford historian or local Longford court clerk might have written out longhand copies of these for keeping locally. Just, you know, we're going to send the originals to Dublin. We need a copy on hand locally. The local copy survived, but the original in Dublin gets destroyed.
Right.
So we've gone around to all the local places we can, find anything that was sent to Dublin. If they're important enough, we'll scan them, digitize them, create metadata, descriptive material around them, bring them all onto one central website. So there's now 70 archives and libraries around the world have contributed material over the 5 years. We've had a team working for 5 years we had one guy, Tim Murcha, based in Public Record Office Northern Ireland in Belfast. We had two colleagues based in the National Archives in UK, colleagues working across Dublin and across Ireland in general, identifying in the catalogue of any given archive records that were copies of what might have been in the Public Record Office. And a lot of catalogues, if you go to most catalogues of an archive or a library today, they don't file things in that way. They file things to say 19th century Irish records about County Clare. But you have to go to it and say, right, is it about County Clare copied from the Public Record Office? Is this a rare survivor, a rare copy survivor? So there's a lot of detective work and a lot of really interesting digital scanning database, creating a data framework that could allow all these different types of records to be presented in a kind of a seamless, flat way to a user, because the general user doesn't care what's in the background, they just want the result on screen.
Yes.
So that all came to fruition then. And the thing, so we're beyond 2022, so you can think of us like the construction firm. And the thing we built is called the Virtual Record Treasury of Ireland, VRTI, and the website is out there now and it's live, and it's called virtualtreasury.ie. So it's a treasury. We're thinking the building that was destroyed in 1922, beautiful state-of-the-art archive building, they called that the records treasury. So they use that word. They consider their records as treasures. So when the treasury burnt, all the treasures were burned. So we're calling our building, our online building, if you like, a virtual treasury. And it's to replicate in as far as possible, wherever we can find some records we found, some copies, some collections we found extensive replacements for. And in other collections, we found very, very little. But we lay all that out on the website so that you can understand where there's riches to be found, and the work continues because we're still going on looking for more.
What I'm fascinated by is that we quoted Mr. Wood there I quoted him in the introduction.
Yeah.
I'm amazed. I also read that, you know, scraps of paper, partly burnt paper, were kept at the time when they went back into the forecourt, to the records office. Nobody just said, ah, that's burnt now, into a plastic bag and we'll put it out for the bins. The forethought and the foresight, I suppose, of actually keeping that. It's like as if somebody in their head was saying, look, there'll be something available in 100 years' time that you'll be able to make this all better. How important was that?
Terribly important. And it's funny you should say that, the foresight, and you'd nearly think they knew we were going to arrive a century later. Yeah. We have sort of felt their ghostly presence many times.
Really?
They were looking at an entire team of archivists and workers in the archive. They worked in this beautiful building, which is six stories high, full to the brim with records, huge natural light ceiling, big glass ceiling and tall windows, all demolished and burnt and destroyed. They scrambled through the rubble for about a year, finding, as you said, burnt books which are like half consumed by fire. Like imagine like a 100-page volume, which, you know, literally physically half of it is burnt and you can see all the crisped burnt edge. You or I would put it in the bin.
Yeah.
But these were archivists and they said, well, we never know. So they kept those. They even kept burnt and damaged indexes, which was an index for finding your way around a collection where the entire collection had been burnt, but the guide to how to use the index, how to use the collection, had survived. So this was like a catalogue to a destroyed collection, but they kept the catalogues. I've seen records and volumes with sort of bullet holes in them and sort of burnt single sheets that are all sort of crisped and burnt. They were all taken out. They were wrapped up carefully by the archivist at the time, Herbert Wood, and his colleagues. They made a kind of a rudimentary listing. They said, look, we reckon this book is probably from, you know, 1753, and there's probably such and such a content. They carefully wrapped it in brown paper, tied it up with string. They, at the time, produced, top of my head, about maybe 250, 300 parcels. And these were like, just like if you wrapped a jacket up in brown paper, made a parcel, it was like that, a gift parcel. They shelved them away in what became the National Archives of Ireland. And it was always kept there as kind of, when the time might come where the resources, money, technology to do something with them. In recent years in our project, we've been involved with the National Archives and the amazing conservation team there. So Zoe Reed and Jessica Baldwin, who have worked on unwrapping these parcels. And the National Archives always knew they were there. They always knew they were important, but it's a matter of getting the concentration of money and resources and sort of hands to do it. But to be present in the conservation room when they opened a parcel for the first time and to smell... you're smelling the burning from 100 years ago. I mean, it is remarkable. And then to see these, some of them are so badly damaged as to merely be like artifacts. You're looking at them like a burnt piece of charcoal and you know it's paper, you know it's parchment. But then others, many others in that collection can be rehumidified. And the conservators do amazing work at Super to see where they gently sort of steam records of the older parchment animal skin records that can be on vellum, that can be kind of relaxed and flattened out, cleaned and made legible again, and can be digitized and put on the web. So there's a small area. I mean, it's about 25,000 sheets of individual records that they've got from that collection, which is a lot of paper, but in the overall context of what was lost is quite a small fragment, but they're the most precious fragment because they were originals, they survived the fire, and they've come back to life, let's say. And they've been really inspiring for us, yeah.
Those little fragments, were they useful in maybe if it was something, as you say, from County Longford and you had a copy of it written there on site? Were you able to compare, or am I getting too into the minutiae of it? Were you able to compare that with what you found in Longford and say, yeah, that's actually it, that's the one?
Yeah, sorry. On occasion we were, and what, like it links back into actually Herbert Wood, who's quite a hero of ours. So say, for example, to take one example, Herbert Wood had listed in his guide, he wrote a kind of a, like a super catalogue to the collection. It wasn't listing every single item. It was describing like shelves, what's on the shelf, broadly speaking. And in three lines, he described the contents of a shelf. But he would have described some records that were, let's say, in the Court of Exchequer, which is the money court that handles collecting money for the Crown. And he described yeomanry returns. So the yeomanry, as in this is like the volunteer defence force that would help the army, the British army in Ireland over time. So the yeomanry returns from the late 18th century. And these seemed kind of quite a boring, nerdy type of academic set of records. Lo and behold, in the burnt records, the burnt ones that came out of the rubble are called the salved records. So they were saved or salved. Mm-hmm. So in the salved records, one of the bundles that they unwrapped turned out to be about 50 sheets of these yeomanry records. And what they are is the actual weekly pay sheet for all the local yeomen turning out. And each, like, it's got, you know, John Smith and then 7 days of the week in boxes across. And he ticks out what days he turned out. Okay. And then he gets paid a shilling for whatever time he turned out. And in those lists, we've got hundreds of names from different County Carlow of people who turned out with the yeomanry. And these names are like filled in on a pre-printed form in 1798. So the 1798 rebellion yeomanry. Wow. And they are, you'd imagine these would all be sort of English sort of planter settler names turning out to help the yeomen suppress the United Irishmen. But actually, no, there's Murphys and Kennedys and Kinsellas in amongst them quite a lot. Now, there's a lot of names that you'd expect to be sort of not traditionally Irish names, but then also in amongst some of them, we discovered reading through these 50 rare sheets, which are physically burnt. You can see the edges are burnt and the burn holes in the paper where you can read the names. Sometimes it'll say so-and-so is absent due to illness and he doesn't get paid. And then there's cases on one sheet where two brothers were executed for disaffection. So they joined the yeomanry, but obviously were seen to be actually you're really siding with the United Irishmen. So they're taken out by their fellow yeoman and executed. Mm-hmm. So local stories, and then that story is backed up by local tradition in Carlow, which we discover later on. So it sort of verifies handed down tradition in other parts of the country. So it is, and it's tiny jigsaw pieces to make a big overall picture. We still don't know what the picture is, but we're finding two pieces linked together and that begins the job.
Will this change some of our history?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm working on the historian side of it, and we get caught up in finding an item or a collection of items and digitizing them and making them accessible. Mm. But we don't know everything that's in it. So we're inviting the public to go and have a rummage around and see. But I think as historians, we've been looking at thinking it will allow us to find some of the hidden voices. This is the state archive. It's what the state has decided to record about the Irish people. So it's not containing, poetry. It's not containing private letters, that kind of stuff. But by reading a state archive, sometimes you can get a sense of, land disputes in Tipperary. And you start to see a lot of Irish names appearing, a lot of Cromwellian records. We've got a very strong line of records from the 17th century, the Cromwellian period. So land seizures, land regrants to planters coming in with Cromwellian settlement and so forth. But it's a state set of papers looking at what they're sort of doing with the land and the people. But you can look at the names, look at the interconnections of names. You can then look at sort of appeals and petitions going to the crown from Irish people, from sort of the Gaelic Irish are appealing to the system for certain things, or they're disputing land settlements or disputing land ownership. So you do get to hear a voice of the native Irish, let's say, before the plantation, but also women's voices and the voices of the poor are usually excluded from archives. Archives are about ownership and money and property and the state and control generally. Mm-hmm. But you can find records within, for instance, one seam of records are called the Grand Jury records. And these spread across Ireland. So all sort of local studies are useful for. Before we had county councils, you had a grand jury. The grand jury was an early form of local government. And there, the grand jury had, on the face of it, very boring records, paying for gravel to repair the road outside Glenties and Donegal. But then you notice, who gets paid for the heaving the gravel? And is it a local farm? And it's some local guy who might be a farmer, but he also gets paid a couple of shillings a week to go and gather gravel from a quarry, repair the road. And you're thinking, it's interesting. And then his son gets paid as well. And then, his grandson gets paid. So that family are somehow plugged into local government and they're getting this scheme. But then you might find the grandson suddenly is then an architect who's building the bridge, also paid for the grand jury. And that's a more specialist thing. So you get to get a social economic, but on the women's side in the grand jury records, sorry to go on a bit, but the grand jury were also responsible for sort of farming out orphan children. So if there was a child that was sort of on the parish, a child that would be looked after by the local welfare, early and rudimentary as it was, they would give it to a local woman to nurse this baby. And this is an orphan, let's say, cast on the local welfare system. And so you get the names of the woman who is nursing the child, and sometimes then comments to say, we gave, three children over the past 3 years to this woman. She gets paid so much for nursing this child. She won't take any more, or else another, we're taking the child back off this woman because we didn't think she did a good job. And so it's naming women in the community that are there. And then also naming women who are sometimes doing work. You find women involved in occupations across all of the records that you wouldn't expect them to be in. So it's interesting to see, maybe widows who've taken over their husband's profession when he died, but then they trade under their own name. So I think it will help us to maybe rewrite slices within history, but it certainly is going to enrich our understanding of our history. But it'll take time. People have to kind of rummage around and find stuff to make that point, yeah.
A lot of the listeners to Live on Era would be maybe from the UK, but would have Irish heritage. They may be from other parts of Europe that listen, and America as well. And I get asked a lot about, finding grandfathers and great grandfathers and things like that. So I know this question needs to be asked for the listener. Mm. And that is, can people find, in other words, are there documents of birth and death in this particular collection as well?
So the birth, marriage and death documents, they were never kept in the record office to begin with. Okay. So they never were destroyed. So they've survived. And there's many of those available on, if you go onto a free site, which is not our site, a state operated site called irishgenealogy.ie. Okay. I think it's a free site and it's just free, funded by the state. And that has birth, marriage and death records. But for people hunting, the problem people often encounter is they can't find census records for 19th century Ireland. Many people have used the 1911 and 1901 census, mm-hmm. and they're a terrific resource, free again, on the National Archives of Ireland website. But all the censuses going right back 1891, 81, 71, right back to 1821 have all been destroyed in various ways, some through the fire in 22, some by other means. But they were original and unique and kind of protected by sort of confidentiality, so they could not be copied wholesale. Okay. So there are no copies to find. So this is a huge thing. Everybody at any public activity I'm at, people always say, what about the census? And it's always a tragedy, can't be found. However, they're the statutory census, the modern census we would think of, where you list everybody in the house and occupation and so forth. Mm-hmm. There was a more rudimentary early census called the religious census, yes, of Ireland, the 1766 religious census. So it's earlier, it's 1766, 18th century, conducted by the Irish House of Lords. So before the Act of Union, the Irish House of Lords wanted to count how many Protestants, how many Catholics in the country. And they got this job done by the local Church of Ireland ministers in parishes and in dioceses all around the country. That 1766 census, religious census, is known and people have used it, and copies of it exist in Belfast and various places. Copies of parts of that exist. But what was never understood was, in detail, how it was conducted, how much of Ireland did it cover, where did it not cover? Right back in 1766, it missed some bits.
Yeah.
And where are all the replacements brought together? So within our virtual treasury, we have what we call a gold seam, a particular area called the 1766 religious census, where you can search by name and by location. And in some cases, it's telling you just basic fact, in this townland, there were 20 Protestant families and 50 Catholic families. And on other occasions, it names all the heads of the household to get surnames related to a parish. And that can allow you to, some, if you're lucky, that can allow you to sort of bridge some of the missing 19th century stuff and bring your family back to, you know, if it was the John Kennedys and the Mary Mahonys, you know, in 1766 in your parish, and you know the long family tradition there, you can begin to make a thread to see, you know, kind of skip over the missing 19th century stuff to 1766. But you may find those 19th century names in other records if they engaged with the state in other ways. It might not be a census, but you might find them in a court case, in a deed, in a land dispute, in a rental, in during the land war in the 1880s. Lots of fighting about stuff, though. We got some land records in there as well.
Hmm. Could I go in and Google my great-great-grandfather and put a year there? Sorry, when I say Google, I mean search.
Yeah, search.
Yeah. It's amazing how we speak now, isn't it? Could I go in and Google my great-great-grandfather and maybe I knew he was from Northern Ireland and put in maybe 1821 and see if I could find anything about him?
You can. You can put in, there's your basic search and there's advanced search. So you can put in a person name or a place name. And in the advanced search, these are the normal terms that people would use. You go into the advanced search, you can put in a name, and it, let's say, comes back with 50 results or 150 results, mm-hmm, or two results. But on the results page, there's a date slider bar. So you can then set the date, say, only show me results between 1800 and 1850. And it'll filter out all the others. And if it's a common name, you might get a plethora of results. You can't tell which Ballynockmoy am I looking for, or which John Smith am I looking for? And so you can filter it out by that. And then what you get then is, so this is not, it's important to say to your listeners, this isn't designed solely as a family research site.
Sure.
It's an archival arrangement. So if you think of the commercial family genealogy sites, they go to a huge archive and they pluck out only the family history stuff and they just present that to the user for a fee. And so you're just looking within one slice of archives. Okay. What we're taking here is the state archive writ large, is the wholesale state archive. And so you have to do a bit of detective work yourself, dig around, which you can filter by, you can search for name, search for place name, search by date, sort of jump around within that. And in many, many cases, you're actually brought straight to a digital object, sort of a scan of a document, that you're able to read a document. In some few cases, we will have transcriptions but no scan of the document, and in other cases we might just have a listing of what was in a document, but we don't have a document to show you because perhaps all we have is a description of a document that never survived. So somebody described it in 1900, the document was burned in 1922, but the description of the document survives. So any clues we found we're giving to the public, because the user, your listeners, will find one thread that joins to another in a way we could never find it. So they'll find their own family or their own locality or their own research topic and pursue it.
And as a historian, you said there that one of those little parcels you were talking about, 250 or 300 of them, you were there when one was opened and you could smell history.
Yeah.
What's it like to smell history?
That was a thrill. I did not expect it. So it was, and we're trying to be sort of cool and calm and professional.
Yeah.
But it was kind of spine tingling thing, because you're seeing the literal ash, you're seeing sometimes little crumbs of masonry or, you know, a tiny bit of broken timber that came out of the rubble. And suddenly the events in 1920, the document you're looking at could be from any period. It could be medieval, it could be 18th century. And it suddenly plugged straight into the events in 1922 and then to today. So suddenly you're kind of thinking, gosh, this was written, this document was written by somebody in 1750 and it's recording a court judgment. It sat on a shelf. The rubble and the ash around it comes from 1922. And I'm here now 100 years later. And it's just as odd. It's like being plugged into a timeline physically. That's interesting. It was, yeah, emotional would be the right word. Emotional sensation.
I'm just thinking you mentioned bullet holes as well in some books. Yeah, if we had the technology, and maybe in 100 years we will, to recreate and just see that bullet coming back out of the book and going into the gun and seeing the man that's holding it and find his story.
I like the way you're thinking, because in fact, in some of the research we've been able to do has allowed us to identify precisely on which floor. So the Beckford Treasury was a six-story building. Okay. It had hundreds and hundreds of shelves and bays of books, and we've got detailed shelving arrangements, so we know more or less, for the majority of the collections, we know exactly what shelf they sat and sometimes how far along the shelf they were. Like, what item was it? Item number 52 on shelf number 7 in bay 16 on floor 5. And we can actually identify it. So in theory, with limitless monkeys and limitless typewriters, you could find out where that book was sitting and guess which direction it was facing and guess which bullet had come in. The trick then would be to find out where was the soldier who fired the bullet at that exact moment. But yeah, as a mind game to play. But no, I like your way of thinking, that notion of sort of linking, these things are all linked by events. And if you can dig into the events, you'd thicken the history so much and learn things that you didn't know before. And you learn about the nuances, you learn about the chance, happenstance, complete random serendipity that's part of history too.
Absolutely. Tell me what we find when we log on to your website so that people can get an understanding of it.
Sure. So the address is virtualtreasury.ie. It's free, so you don't have to log in or sign in or get a passcode or anything like that. Just go straight on. Immediately you're greeted with a picture of the destroyed building. We've created a virtual reality model of the building. So you're presented with a picture of the building and a search bar where you can just type in Murphy straight away and just see what comes up. So you can immediately engage with the search. In the top corner, the top right-hand corner of that immediate page, the very first homepage when you arrive on, search bars at the bottom, in the top right-hand corner, you'll see a little icon to say virtual tour, and you can click on that. And what happens is you get a 3D model of the destroyed building opens up. You can, on your laptop or on your phone, it's best on a laptop or a tablet or a desktop, you can manipulate, you can turn the building around, you can open little hotspots on the building to learn about the building, to learn about the Battle of the Forecourts, to learn about our project. And then you can click and go through the door. You can self-drive yourself around inside the building, visit the search room where the readers would have read for 50 years when it was in operation, look at documents on the desk and open them. You're looking at these beautiful 3D color models of the desks they sat at, and then go through into the Record Treasury itself. And in the Record Treasury, which is the multi-story metal framework that restored all the records, you can jump around within the building, tour about. This is aimed at people who wouldn't normally gravitate towards an archive, and also aimed at younger users, because we want this to be open to everyone. So if you've got children who want to play on a VR model for free, let them into this and they can click on buttons and learn a bit of history as they go. And they don't have to, it's not a set course where you must learn this, you must learn that. Play around. There's stuff hidden in the building. So jump around. Can you find this hidden burnt record? It'll be a little dot somewhere in the shelves. Go and have a rummage and find. And then at the end of that virtual tour, the last thing you see is inside the building is a small doll's house of the building itself inside the building. You click on the doll's house and the entire treasury opens up like a book, and you can hunt across all the, you see like the building can split down the middle like a melon and opened. And you can look at all different shelves like a doll's house. So there's two ways in. You can go in through the normal search like you do on Google, an advanced search, or you can go into it through the virtual reality model and look at examples of the kind of records that we're finding. And some people won't have any deep interest and some people have a shallow interest, and that's fine. It's there for everyone to use. If somebody does a search and you just do a general search like you do Murphy and up comes the result, you get all your results come up as thumbnails in the bottom. You scroll down through your thumbnails. You can filter, as I said, by date, or you can click on a thumbnail and it will show you where there's a visual image, and it'll show you an image. And in many cases, we have a handwritten document. It can be a pain to read a handwritten document. While we were working on our project, a different project called Transcribus created an AI computer software package that can read handwriting. So we have processed as much as we can, we're still doing it right this minute, as much as we can of the handwritten text through the Transcribus model So it's not perfect, but it will allow you to search a handwritten manuscript document for Murphy and for Ballytor. So you can search for personal place names within a 600-page manuscript. So rather than have to flick through trying to read old handwriting, you can let the computer help you do this. And we have now 50 million words of transcribed text on the website there. So that's not 50 million names, 50 million words, all types of words. But it's to allow the public to get in and search. And we're excited and fascinated to see what people will find, because we don't know what's all that in it. Mm. You know, we can find collections, but in all collections, we don't know every word. Yeah.
You mentioned that there's more to come. What's your next step?
Some of that is, so we were working towards the deadline of this week as the centenary of the destruction. But in the nature of research, this is a research project. In the nature of research, we were encountering important replacement materials in different locations, but some of them were so complex to handle or maybe so large, we didn't have time to get them ready for the launch. Okay. So we've shown the people, for the public, for the launch, everything we have. And then, so we also show, even if it's incomplete, you can see everything we have. And then the next stuff that's coming on would be, for example, the Library of Congress in the United States has copies of Irish Houses of Parliament, so pre-1800 Union, Irish Houses of Parliament records in the Library of Congress. There are copies of them. They have microfilmed them back when microfilm was a thing back in the 80s, 70s and 80s. And those microfilms have been, copies of those microfilms are in the Public Record Office of Northern Ireland. Technology now allows us to convert microfilm into searchable JPEG images on the screen, which can be run through the transcriber program, so they're readable. And so that's a big chunk, there's a few steps in that. But so some of these are records from the 1770s. So like around the time of the American Revolution, they're the Irish Parliament talking about Irish politics, but it also refers to transatlantic politics. So that's one chunk. There are other records which are in Irish and British repositories where it might be single volumes that are copies of a particular land court, whatever, that we know exist. We just haven't got to them yet to bring on board. As we find additional material and have new pulses of activity, we'll put it on the news. We'll promote it on social media. We'll also put on the news section of our website. So if somebody goes in and plays around now and they come back to us in 2 or 3 months' time and goes to the news site, they'll see what the updates are and what's new to the collection, so they can follow our progress as they go.
You just took away my next question, but that's all right. That's answered. Because
sorry.
No, not at all, because it's answered. Because I can see and understand why you'd get national coverage, you know, the last couple of days and the next few days. But in 6 months or 12 months' time and something major might happen, I want to know about it. So your social media is where we go for that.
Yes, absolutely. And be happy to come back and talk about anything future that comes upon us.
Fantastic. Whoever said there was no history, there was no future in history, huh?
Indeed. So you never said a true word.
It's fascinating stuff, and I've delayed you long enough, so I'm going to leave it there. Your website address, once again, is virtualtreasury.ie. I opened the homepage, but I know when I go in there, I'm going to exceed my steps for the day on my watch. So I haven't gone in there yet, but I will do it the weekend. I'm looking forward to it. So virtualtreasury.ie. Dr. Kieran Wallace, thank you so much for talking to me. It's a fascinating project, and I can't wait to explore it more. Thanks a million.
Super. Thanks so much, Chair.